Yippee! Yippee! Yippee!
Listen,
let
the title of this thing. Don't title again.
And I did not leave me
That's enough. Okay. 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 All right. There's the chicken. Scarborough Dude, coming at you from Cedar Bray Shopping Mall. I'm parked kind of smack in the middle of it. To my right is the Canadian Tire. That's the place where I've mentioned more than once because I'm fascinated by this. A woman came in swinging a golf club at all the infidels. And was arrested, and I don't know what happened. I think she was jailed, but you think, oh, my God. I'm looking at the apartment blocks where she came from across the way. A lot of course, new Canadians in there. And when you walk through this mall, it's one of the few places in Toronto where you do see a lot of people, women, wearing black from head to toe with a slit for the eyes. And then those crazy running shoes underneath, you know, sneaking out under the black apparel. Anyway, that's one view. Then, of course, is the Burger King where I go for my 85-cent senior coffee. Not doing that today, thank you. And behind me, the beer store, where I just picked up my beer for Saturday. I thought, you know, on some days when there's important things to do, like sort out my closets and start throwing stuff out, I instead fill the day with little things. I got a party Saturday, I've mentioned, I'm going to, planning on it. So maybe Monday I'll go and get my beer for the party. Like, it's ridiculous. I could have done this any time, but I feel, okay, I did something. So I've got four beer, and I even decided which beer. I went for all imports this time. They're so much cheaper than the Canadian beer, and they're good. And I'm trying to limit myself to four cans, each one 500 milliliters. So that's 2 liters of beer. That should be plenty, because I know I'm going to be toking up. And I just don't want to get out of it like I have done in the past. Shouldn't be saying that to myself at the age of 71. You'd think I would have matured. But hey, one of the reasons I'm doing the Dixon Janes podcast still is to set a good example for you. So anything I do that's stupid, you can file that away as a reminder. Yeah, well, I'm 70. I won't be as dumb as that guy. Yeah, good luck with that. If you're still listening to this. Anyway, I've been listening to people, of course, in their 30s. My new friends, both of whom it seems will be at the party, Tim and Anthony. And, of course, I've got a belfry to them. So my other job today was go back to that one store, open up all the boxes with the bells, and only buy the last two with this beautiful... I cannot get over... I posted a picture last time. In fact, I did for the last podcast. How beautiful they are. It's just the black, I guess, the black and the pink. And they're lovely. So I got the last two. They had two other styles, colors. And I only would have bought those if there's somebody I felt obliged to buy one for, but really didn't like them all that much. And they wouldn't know the difference, perhaps, but I would. And, oh, I saved the nice one. So there you go. So there's my jobs for today. And I was going to start recording earlier, and then I thought, no, wait till after the men's group tonight. You're going to men's group at the church. Maybe you'll have something to say. Because I almost feel, now that I have maybe a couple of new listeners who are checking in from for now anyway, that there's a little more pressure on me to put out an interesting podcast, especially when you get a comment from somebody, hey, I really enjoyed the last one. Sort of makes you feel, oh, well, gosh, is this one going to be as entertaining? And, of course, you let go of that, or I've learned to let go of that. Well, sort of, fuck you if you don't like it. It is what it is, and I know everybody hates that expression. But that is the truth when it comes to podcasting. You do what you do. It is this moment now. In fact, I've been listening to Sam Harris, Making Sense podcast, on the illusory. Illusory self. There is no self. There is no free will. Dig into Sam Harris if you're interested in that. But it just means, hey, we're kind of make stuff up as we go along, and you're living in this moment. And this moment, on a Monday afternoon, I could be back home, and I know I'd have the damn TV on. I'd probably switch to Netflix if there's nothing good on Turner Classic Movies. Or I'd be going down for another nap with my pussycat. But instead, I'm out here running errands. So there you go. That's the start. I see I've got letters from the banks to open. Oh, my God. Probably a Revenue Services, North York. What's that for? Probably my tax, I guess, for the year. So there's real life world things to do. I have been doing a few. I mean, I did, to my credit. I've sort of put out an invite for the two teachers I hired last year for my summer study tour and invited them both back. And that's a huge relief if I've got the same two teachers from before. Anybody who, again, if you're new to this, and of course even if you're not, you may not have in mind how much there is to do when you're preparing a program, a three-week program for 32 girls and two teachers coming all the way from Japan, and you're responsible pretty well for every bit of the time. Now, mind you, I have a partner who takes care of the coach tour. My good friend Judy, for well over 25 years, who I absolutely adore, like a very close sister. And then the camp I take them to, and the camp, I just turn the girls over, and they line up who's going to get picked to work with my students, because they absolutely love it. It's a highlight of the year for the camp counselors to get to work with my group of girls, because they are just so much fun, and you know, they listen, they follow instructions, they try hard, they're friendly, they're cute. They sing and they dance. It's just all quite wonderful. So I've got to be on top of that. And, yeah, so what does that do? It brings us up to date. That's just a start. Just because I needed to start. Now I want to go home. So let's shut this off and give you a song. That was a very, very quick intro. But I know the longer I drag it on, there's nothing really in particular. Well, one little thing, just one little thing. You know, you're driving along and you let somebody in and they want to merge in. They're coming out of the mall. And so you slow down. You got a distance and you slow down. You're just crawling, giving them lots of room, but they still don't quite get it. They're sort of waiting because maybe they're not used to people letting them in. And so you got to flash your high beams. You can beep, beep, flick, 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 you know, and he probably sees that. Oh, okay. That's a sign. And then you wait for them to hold up their hand, their right hand, as a thank you, to say, I acknowledge what you've done. And when they don't do that, it's just a little bit of disappointment. Like, and usually it's followed by, oh, you fucking asshole. Like, you want to thank you for that. Like, that's the thing you do. That's motorist etiquette, you know? Somebody lets you in, put your hand up, say, hey, thank you, appreciate the break, thanks. That's just something you do. And I guess a lot of people just don't know that. And I don't even know if they teach that. I don't think they do teach that at driver's ed or anywhere else. It is a courtesy, but it goes along with manners and everything else. There's some real heavy-duty stuff to I could get into. And I don't think we'll do that right now. Are you? You're not in the mood for that, are you? You don't want to get into the heavy-duty shit. But you just got to know that it's not me and it's not my job and it's not my role and it's not the way I want to play this game of just being happy and entertaining you and making you happy. This is my life unfolding. This is my weekly journal. This is where I'm at on this day, January, what is it, 13th? Yeah, January 13th. Almost 4 in the afternoon, 2020. I just had a son who just turned 28 years old. My God. And life goes on. Life goes on. So my advice to you, God damn, get your shit together and make the most of it. And the thing is, the one thing I notice, again, from listening to these people in their 30s, heading quickly towards 40, is you got to make the most of every day. And I think you're more aware of it as you get older because you're very, very aware that the time is finite and, you know, how many more summers or falls can you look forward to, you know? Like, hey, yeah, God, can I think? Can I hope for 10 more years? You don't think about that when you're in your 20s and 30s and so on. But it's also about just, I don't know, I guess you can't be expected to know everything at that age. It's all learning, and I guess never give up on the learning. I think if I was in my 30s doing this podcast, God, well, who knows? I mean, I could have more listeners. I could have less. I don't know what message I'd be giving. I don't know what I'd be like. There's a picture that just came up on Facebook showing me in my first car in Austin, America, and I'm wearing just a pair of white shorts and nothing else. But shorts, not underwear. Leaning on this little car and being out in Vancouver and the thrill, the freedom that I felt, like, hey, shit, here I am, left my family, left no parental ties or responsibilities, my own, you know, you sort of couch surf for a while and eventually get your own apartment. I had that wonderful place in North Van on West 2nd and Lonsdale. And you get your car and you go off camping on the weekend and you're doing a lot of partying and you're smoking, I guess, a lot of weed. I don't remember ever buying the weed, but I've always, you know, it was always around. You're always stoned. And we were drunkards. We were piss artists. That's the thing I guess I'm getting at. We drank a lot. The whole time in Vancouver, we were drinkers. And by drinkers, I mean drinkers, like getting drunk at parties and having fun. But we looked after each other. Nobody was angry. Nobody got into fights. Two of us ended up in jail. It appears to be the same weekend. Me and Barnacle Bill both got arrested for drunken behavior. Although in my case, in my defense, I was just passed out on a park bench. Actually, it was on a street. But thrown in the drunk tank. And Barnacle Bill, his case was a little more exciting. But so we did that kind of shit. And so maybe that's where I was if I'm winding the clock back. What was I doing in the 30s? I don't know. Let's see. In my 30s, okay, born 48, so 70. Yeah, all the 70s, basically. I moved to Vancouver in 72, and those were the party years. And I used to look back at them almost a little bit embarrassed about the life. And now I think, no, hey, man, that was good time. And that was also the summer of the Chilkoot, the trip to the Yukon, Alaska, 1975. Had a job running a workshop, for a sheltered workshop for mentally handicapped adults. Hey, that was a responsible job I had there. And, gosh, living girlfriend for quite a bit of that time. Wonderful woman that I'm still very close to today. So, those were good days. I enjoyed my 30s. What I would say on these things, I don't know. You know, I mean, podcasting wasn't around then. I did. We wrote letters. We shared stuff that way. And I guess that's the thing that if I ever do get my act together, I would go back and dig out a letter and just read a passage from there. I think you might find it interesting. My cousin was just telling me, hey, I found copies, printed copies of all your letters you wrote from Europe, 1969, 1970. And I said, yeah, I got those too. But they were kind of the watered-down letters. Those are the ones I knew were going to my parents and family. So I'm not talking about acid in Morocco or smoking keef and all of that stuff. But it was okay to talk about drinking. Hanging out with Aussies in Earl's Court in London, you know, and just going out to the pubs and getting drunk. Yeah, there was a lot of drunkenness. I was a piss artist. I think that was the word we chose, with a sense of pride almost. A piss artist means you could get drunk well. You didn't, you know, you made your way home and you never got into a fight. You never really hurt anybody other than yourself and, you know, the cursed hangovers. But you did it in style, and you had fun, and people enjoyed being around because the parties were wild. People, we hung out with this wonderful guy, Big John, who died in the Czech Republic of Lou Gehrig's disease. Sad way to go. But while he was living, he loved to party, and party he did. He would throw the parties. He'd make blenders full of drinks, and you knew if it was a party at his place, he'd tell everybody, hey, you got to bring this or this or this, because we were just scroungers. But we'd bring liquor, we'd bring something or other that he asked for, and then he would lay on food because he was also a chef. And he's the one who made himself president of the hot tub company in Vancouver, like just made himself president and convinced companies in New York or in California that, hey, he was their man up north. And his whole reason for doing that was so that he could get his friends to throw wild parties and get people naked, dancing in and out of hot tubs. And that's what we did. Yeah, it was fun. Those are the good old days. Those are days. And, of course, there was the gay scene, too. My first exposure to hanging out with my poor friend Glenn, who I've just found out is going to be in the hospital for cancer surgery. A little scary. I should be writing him rather than talking to you. Yeah, Glenn would take us to the Gandhi Dancer and other bars in Vancouver where you'd knock on the door and somebody would, you know, look through a peephole and decide whether they'd let you in or not. And I remember Glenn showing up wearing just a caftan with his pockets full of joints, and you could bring in your own bottle of wine and they'd charge a corkage fee or something. And he'd light up joints on the dance floor, and we're listening to, you know, disco and Donna Summers. This is in the roaring 70s. Crazy, fun time. So I probably wouldn't have had any time to sit in the car and talk to you back then, but I'm relaying now, and I'm enjoying the recollection of these memories, of the fun we had when we left home, finished university, and said, okay, that's it. Starting a new life, and there was this migration out west. Like, we moved a group of Lachiners. So you had your group of friends, and then we melted into or blended into a West Coast tribe that was already there. And we just completely melded into one unit of us and the West Coasters. And we'd go off to these every Mother's Day, go off to the Mother's Day camping weekend drunk for decades that went on. And those were roaring. They got a great big fire. The fire would always be nicknamed the Dresden. Not nicely, but taken care of by a German himself, dear Richard, who also died. The three key people that joined the two tribes together are all dead. The three of them, and they were the three that sort of died sort of in a row, spaced apart, but the three people that connected the people from Lachine with the people in Vancouver and responsible for most of the parties. Each one died. Peter the accountant, Richard, nicknamed Da-da-da, and John. So there you go. We'll end on that note. So, yeah, this did take a little longer, but that's what happens. You stay on, you count on your instincts to, should I just push the stop button or should I just keep going? And I don't know about you, but I'm really glad I kept going. So, thanks for listening, and now I'll go home and relax. Scarborough Dude. Thank you. only one ring this time because I want to be quiet. Boys and girls, listeners to the Dixon Janes podcast, I have to thank you. And I'll tell you why. You brought me here. And here is the parking lot of the Jinying Temple on Brimley. This is a very large Chinese Buddhist temple, which I have driven by many times. And today, I was drawn to come here. Oh, it is quite amazing. And, you know, you might not get it, but I do. So that's okay. I had a doctor's appointment and found out that I have, rheumatoid arthritis or something like that. What is it? Oh, nodular osteoarthritis in my hands. And that I inherited. It's a family condition. And that was fine. She said, I could give you a shot in that, the one finger that's swollen. But the trouble is, you know, sometimes it creates more pain for a couple of days. And I thought, no, I'll pass on that. Thanks. And she said, if you can live with it as you have been, you know, just leave it. And get an exercise ball and start squeezing your fingers. So, anyway, afterwards I thought, okay, I want a podcast. And I found a road I had never been on, and it was an industrial area of Scarborough, right behind a factory. And, oh, this is kind of cool. And I took a picture, and I posted a tweet, you know, and parked the car, and then just didn't feel right. Like, I don't really want to be podcasting from here. There's nothing inspiring me. So I kept going along progress and came to Brimley. And Brimley, of course, is the street that I always take that leads to Bluffers Park and also the other park that I go to, named after the settler family, Thompson Park. And I drove, and I was just about to turn into Thompson Park, and I thought, no, I know there's a temple on Brimley. Why don't I go there instead? So I really wanted something that would inspire me. I thought, okay, I'll just take a couple of pictures. So I parked the car, got outside, and was quite blown away by the size of this structure and took several photos, one of which you'll see with this podcast, I'm sure, of the statues outside right up against the next-door neighbor's house, mind you. And then thought, well, why not climb the stairs? There's a really neat a place, you know, with sand, a structure where you would burn incense like you would have in the front of any temple and maybe say some prayers. So took a couple of pictures there and then went up to the door and saw a sign and said, you know, you can enter. And then, of course, you're supposed to take your shoes off to enter the temple proper. And I thought, oh, I can't do that. So I just pushed the big doors open a little so I could see inside, and I was gobsmacked. I don't know if that's a correct term, of this wall of Buddhas. Like, I mean, talking hundreds and hundreds of Buddhas of all kinds of it was garish would be one word, and I don't mean that in a bad way. It's just like overwhelming in gold and the things you would see in India, in Japan, in the variations of the multi-headed, so many Buddhas stacked one upon the other. And I did take a couple of pictures, and then I called out to a woman going by, a monk, actually, a Buddhist monk, and she turned me over to somebody else, a volunteer. And she was the kindest, nicest, gentlest woman who said, come in. I said, oh, I can't. I've got a brace and I'm wearing shoes. That's okay. Come in and have a seat. And, of course, handed me a pamphlet as I asked to. I'll read from that now. This is founder of the True Buddha School, Living Buddha Liang Sheng. His Holiness, Living Buddha Liang Sheng, Grand Master Sheng Yang Lu, is the root guru of the true Buddha school. He is referred to as Grand Master by his disciples, and he's regarded as an emanation of Amitabha Buddha. And then it goes on about his lineage. And this particular school incorporates elements of Zen and Taoism in his teachings. He emphasizes actual practice and encourages students to integrate Buddhist teachings into their daily lives. Good thing. The quintessence of his personal journey, his methods of cultivation, and his realization are embodied in True Buddha Tantra, which is an inspiring, practical, and powerful teaching that is well-suited for contemporary living. Okay. She also, on my way out, gave me a calendar of events here, including the Chinese New Year, and invited me to come to that. She truly was... Ungar, I felt like a bit of an imposter. I had come in, I took some pictures from the doorway, and then, of course, saw the signs, no pictures. And I will not post those out of respect and out of, in regard to their kindness, I will not post those pictures. But then she said, please, you can come, you can pray, you can just have a look around. And I circled the entire thing. I mean hundreds of images. You could spend a long time looking at any one of them. Now, I was drawn, there were four different sections along the side walls, and then there was the great big master wall with the layers of, stacked layers of Buddhas, and oh, my gosh. I spent a long time here. But I was drawn to one wall, kind of had a blue background, and it seemed quite feminine. They were all feminine, and there was none of the... not so many of these sort of violent ones. You'd see the guards, if you visit a temple in Japan, you see these guardians that are quite fierce to drive away bad spirits. And there was less of that here. There was a warmth, and I was drawn to it. And then when I ended my tour and came back to thank her and bow nicely, she said, was there anything in particular? I said, well, I was drawn to that one over there. And she said, ah, the medicine one. And I smiled and I said, isn't that interesting? I've just come from a doctor and I'm seeing another doctor tomorrow. And yet here I am. The one thing that stood out for me was the medicine Buddha section. So I liked that. It truly was a heartwarming. And I went in with, like, you know, all that negativity. Oh, my God, another temple. And, you know, who believes this kind of crap? And they're just in it for the money. And, you know, all the negative things you can so quickly assign to something. But instead allowed my heart to be opened a little. And the reason I'm thanking you, the listener, is because I just felt today I want a podcast from someplace different, someplace special. And I went from like an industrial park to this very elaborate and quite amazing Chinese Buddhist temple. So there you go. I don't know what else to say about that other than I'm gleeful right now. And I have the feeling I'll be back. The idea of 11 o'clock on a Friday night in January the 24th, my father's birthday, I could be there for the offering of the first incense in the annual blessing light of the Chinese New Year Eve. And it just strikes me as something that would be interesting. I mean, I'm a chicken out. I may think, no. Hey, you know, you had one good run at it. That's all you need. But then invited me to a vegetarian dinner on the next day, and I don't know. You know, anyway, that's fine. It was, this in itself was good. I'm going to change subjects entirely now, and I almost feel disrespectful, like I should stop here with this. I just can't stop smiling. But I should stop and go back. Oh, this is painful. To the previous clip when I talked about the debauchery of my time in Vancouver, and I was sort of talking about that as my 30s, and it wasn't. Those were my 20s. I left. I left Vancouver when I was 24. After I left Montreal. When I was 24, by train, and moved, like it was, you know, all my books and a whole trunk full of stuff that was shipped out west. That was going to be a move. Said goodbye to my family. And so it was my 20s of all those wild days, which makes more sense. In 1980, you know, the end of the 70s when I was 32 is when I moved to Nigeria and spent 2 years living in this bush village, which was, you know, it's a cliche to say a life-changing experience, but it absolutely certainly was. And so that took up the 80s, and then 84 I was in Japan. So my 80s, when I was in my 30s, were spent outside of Canada, largely. Coming back, getting married in my 80s, coming back to Canada for 2 years, going back to Japan to resume working with the same company. And so that's it. 75, the middle of there, is when we climbed the Chilkoot, got drunk day and night, and moved myself back to Toronto to start a new life and become the writer I felt I was destined to be and never was. And I've mentioned that before. That's when I got that spoon at Honest Ed's, which I was showing in my YouTube videos, and ended my writing career, I think, the day I started, and became a teacher, a part-time teacher, and it went on from there. 1982, 83, I spent a full year at Carleton University, living in Ottawa, getting my teaching certificate in TESOL, teaching English as a second language, which is the thing that got me to Japan afterwards. So the 30s was a time of change and new challenges. So the debauchery was the 20s. I just wanted to set the record straight on that. I'm kind of happy to be reliving it with the idea that, okay, I might have a couple of new listeners. Old listeners may have heard these stories before, but they damn well would have forgotten anyway. So I'm just taking advantage of this time to relive. And for me, it's kind of fun to try, and because of the further away, like I'm thinking, okay, 50 years ago, like 50 years ago this month, in fact, on the beginning of the Chinese New Year, was when I sailed on the Karadeniz, the Turkish freighter from Athens, Greece to, or Piraeus, where the harbor was, to Barcelona, and then made my way down to Morocco. And that's 50 years ago. So there, you know, there I am, the beginning of my 20s, as a young man, just turned 21, off backpacking around Europe. So it's been a life of adventure. I've taken chances. I've done things. And today, in a very small but very peculiar way, was another tiny little adventure to enter the Jinying Temple and share that story with you. So I think I'll end there rather than babble on. I think we're going to be hearing some Moody Blues. I've played them often on the Dixon James podcast, so they'll be repeats. But they kind of, Pink Floyd was getting high and getting into outer space and being, wow, way out there. Moody Blues was more kind of like on a spiritual journey. That's how some of us felt. That's certainly how I felt. And again, it ties into, it was this friend Glenn who's going in to have surgery to remove some cancer, who turned me on to all that wonderful music. And we exchanged emails yesterday. I said I should be doing that, and I did. And it was quite heartwarming, the wonderful exchange. I think my letter to him brought him to tears, and I was certainly moved. Glenn was my first openly gay friend who, you know, had the courage, and I says, hey, to introduce us to his friends and places, and to see another slice of life. So for that, I'm forever grateful. And Glenn, who has been living with his partner for, my gosh, I think they've had at least a 30th anniversary. Maybe it's a 40th. I don't know. That they've stuck together, which is really quite a wonderful story. So Scarborough Dude sharing little pieces of his life with you, the Dixon James listener, and also feeling a lot of gratitude for gosh, I'm going to say it, having the courage to do the things I did, and encourage any of you out there thinking, gee, you know, my life needs a little bump, a little change. And sometimes for me, what worked best was just changing locations, uprooting myself. I did this constantly when I needed, it was like picking up the needle and dropping it down on another track. And, I did that from living in Montreal, Ottawa, Toronto, Vancouver, and then Nigeria and Japan and, different places along the way. And it just resets your whole life. You start over. Okay, now where are we going now? That's the tool that worked for me. Just getting up and moving. Scarborough Dude, signing out from the Jin Ying Temple right here on Brimley Road in Scarborough. She did tell me there used to be a church here. And, of course, that sort of tells an interesting story, isn't it? Christian church is down. And she said they have about 5,000 devotees who come here regularly. Bye for now.
Straighten them out. stretch out the lines. Follow the path to the sound of the river with the four trees fell by the side. On the left of your right, twists on limbs, spilling heels through a mudslide. Skin tears on the slopes, but don't turn around. Fall towards the light, singing out like a phantom, smiling as
though. Okay, this is going to feel a little bad, because I'm going to talk over this song that is so beautiful. God damn, that's beautiful. It's called The Sun, Oh Strange Sun, by Pictish Trail, and that is on a Mojo Children of Pepper CD. I don't know if I've played it for you before or not. We'll just leave it running. So, listen, folks, I've explained this before. This, the Dixon James podcast format, is the opposite of a scripted podcast. It's the opposite. Diametrically opposed. Oh, God, it's so good. But I'm gonna have to just turn this sucker down. I got a remote control. See if this works. Which one would be volume? That doesn't seem to do anything. Anyway. Oh, there we go. Because, you know, it's me or this. That doesn't seem to work either. Yeah, the point I was getting at was that the place I go to, the time I go there, determines the content. And so today I took you to Thompson Park and thought, well, that'll be nice. Okay, I got to do it manually. I got to turn down this thing. I don't know what you're hearing, but it's a shame. It's so nice. You hear the truck running in the background. I'm in the road truck. I went to Thompson Park, and I was going to record to you two nights ago, and just rang the bell, and the batteries died right after. So, no problem. I got a lot of batteries at home or in the road trek. And so left this morning forgetting to replace the batteries. Got all the way to Thompson Park, turned it on, batteries dead, found another pair in the glove compartment, dead. So here we are. Then figure, well, why? I don't have to go out. I got this thing parked in my driveway. It's sunny. Although there's a few little snow flurries coming down. Ugh, who the fuck cares? That's what I mean, you know? Like, hey, I'm like a random generator right now. Words are going to tumble out, but eventually, this fucking needle will land in a groove and I'll take you along. Okay? So bear with me. Be patient. Fuck, man. If every word in every conversation had to count, you know, we'd just be mumbling to ourselves in the dark. So, words counting. Last night, we had a gathering. I went to church. Again, we had a meeting. People from the community, the real Scarborough community. In fact, a fellow who started up an organization called Rise. Gosh. About intelligence and creativity. I can't remember what it stands for. But bringing young people together and, you know, through schools and so on. And my son was very aware of it. And I said, yeah, hey, the guy who started that was one of our speakers last night in this community circle. Greta had arranged for all the chairs to be in a circle. And we invited in these three people who were here a month or so ago. Representing, one guy was an artist, a designer, clothing and visual art. Somebody else was a poet. And then another guy who was mostly painting. And they represent a lot of Scarborough that we don't represent. Our church is old, white-haired people. These were young black people. And Greta felt, as did most of the congregation, hey, we gotta get together. So basically what we're trying to do is make our church available for these young people's groups. You know, we've got a lot. And what they were into was saying, yeah, but we're interested in you guys, too, and your stories. And it was the most beautiful interaction last night, totally unscripted. I went up to Greta after and said, I admire your courage for sort of planning a meeting without really an agenda, but just to get people talking. And it was a really, really good feeling. Somebody else came in representing sort of the, well, at least partially anyway, a gay black community, which is, you know, can be a challenge. And there were great conversations. But when she said, let's just get things started, I sort of waved my hand and she said, can? And I thought, ooh, what did I just do? And I went and told the story of the story I've just told you about finding the temple on Brimley Road. And it was amazing. The feedback I got, because I did it podcasting style. I just did a, you know, I just, what do you call that? I mean, it's like, in a way, slam poetry. I don't know what I'm going to say, but the words are just going to flow out because I'm just going to go with them. And it was so well received by them. They don't clap. They were doing the snapping of fingers for, yeah, yeah. And teaching us some new language, which was great fun. But it was a wonderful, wonderful occasion. But basically, I'm here to give myself a little credit because, believe it or not, you folks, I'm often very hard on myself. Or, you know, I have this, it's not an inferiority complex. Maybe it's even the opposite, and I'm trying to put the brakes on that. But I struggle with confidence issues, and I always have, and that's been evident through anything I've ever said on this podcast. But lately, I've been in such a good groove of just doing things right. And last night, I just knew, hey, speak up. And it seemed completely off topic, but I was able to bring in, hey, I got two children born in Japan. And basically, the essence of my conversation, I did introduce myself as a Scarborough dude, and that they just laughed, like, what the hell? I didn't know there was one. But talked about having two kids born in Japan, where they would never quite fit in, and then yet their first, you know, week in kindergarten here, hey, everything's fine. And that's why I love Scarborough, and particularly I love the fact that I drive down Brimley Road and enter this huge Chinese temple and be drawn towards the medicine field or area, and gods and gurus and, you know, effigies and whatever these things were. These Buddha-like figures, and have this wonderful conversation with the woman. And everybody after, Ken, thank you. And Greta and her husband gave me a big hug. So what I'm saying is, and I'm trying not to make it sound like bragging, even though it is exactly that, I have such a good place in this church, in this community. And I say the word church, and immediately I hear other people's alarm bells. Oh, don't tell me he's found Jesus. No, I haven't. Well, except, in my fellow man and woman, this sense of community, this sense of belonging, the fact I was tapping this guy with my cane last night, just sort of teasing, like, bam, I mentioned teasing before. The fact that I'm comfortable enough and know these people enough and they know me enough and that I'm a part of this community and a respected and well-liked part. It's a wonderful, wonderful feeling. And this is after, again, I'm repeating myself here, but after leaving other communities, like I was so involved totally in the Japan community here in Toronto, and bam, that's all gone. That's done. This is something new. And it's very, very, very satisfying and encouraging, but I guess really, if there is a point, the point is I'm in a very happy stage of my life in spite of the fact that, Jesus, I just made a list of all the things wrong with me. And we're talking about, this, osteoarthritis in the hands that won't get better. I'm talking about 2 feet that I'm not feeling sensations anymore. I went to, again, to the physiotherapy, and the simplest little things I can't do in terms of movement, you know, putting one foot in front of the other, whoa, gonna fall. Can't do that. Got to hold on to something. That's weird, and that's right now inexplicable. Could be diabetes related. At least that's a numbness. Although I'm told I don't have diabetes. You know, the blood levels, everything's normal. I'm not taking insulin. So there's all these things. And then I got the date for the surgery. I don't know if I mentioned that yet, or just that just happened Wednesday. Yeah, March 26th. I'm going to be getting a new knee. Have that joint replacement, and wow, that's big time. And then I looked at all the sheets involved and all the physio involved and all the things you gotta remember and do, and holy shit. And so you'd think, on the one hand, well, that's gotta be a bummer, but it's brought out the opposite in me. I'm at such a high. I mentioned before the importance of, you know, grocery shopping and greeting the person behind there, at least the minimum, getting a smile, exchanging a smile, but making their transaction. There's somebody else right behind you, and they've just done somebody. You're in there, you're not going to waste their time, you're not going to ask a stupid question or make pointless conversation, but you're somehow going to make it smooth and easy and nice and pleasant. And I've nailed that. That's a harder one because it's such a short time frame. But yesterday I had to have blood drawn too, or you know, Wednesday after seeing the knee surgeon. And I had that woman laughing the whole time. And that just, it's normally such a serious thing. Yes, in room, you know, 6 over there, and they sit you down, and, you know, you're hoping it's not, they're going to get the vein and it's not going to hurt. And I just engaged in a conversation, was asking about whether she has benefits or not, and teasing about her company, and just, I left feeling good, but I know the few minutes she spent with me drawing out a vial of blood were probably the nicest part of her day, because the other people weren't going to be like that or do that. I could tell looking around the fucking waiting room. People don't exchange, and it is. These are our fellow human creatures we got to be nice to. And I'm at a point where it's just become so easy and so natural and so much fun that every interaction I'm having has been a very positive, pleasant, life-affirming, friendly exchange. And that's a good thing. That's a point you want to get to in your life. And I know an awful lot of people who just, you know, I don't even want to deal with people. I want to just, you know, I'll check out through the machine, or I'll buy it online. I don't want to deal with any people, man. Well, fuck, man, you're going in the wrong direction, because the only thing we've got are our fellow humans. And that's so important. Now, admittedly, it's easier when you get older, and maybe old people are guilty of doing this too much, and maybe young people, I don't want to talk to the fucking old man. I just want to be done. I want my thing. Fuck you. Don't talk to me. You know, and okay, well, sorry for you, but there is a loss in there. Something is missing, you know, and all this time buried in your online social media life and not existing in three-dimensional space with real people out there is a loss, and with a cost. So, okay, enough of the lecturing. Fuck you, Bull. Fuck you, Scarborough dude. Yeah. Anyway, I'm going to end this podcast now early. Normally, I end on a Sunday night, post it Monday. This one is going to be done early because I'm done. And God, I wish there was something else in there to leave a nicer taste behind than me just lecturing about how wonderful I am, and I know how to live a good life and you don't. That's not true. It depends who I'm talking to. And that's the thing. You see, I sometimes think about, well, who's listening and what is the message? And in the beginning, I knew it was, fuck them, whoever's listening, I don't care, this is for me, I'll say what I want. And basically, I'm still doing that, but maybe occasionally somewhat apologetically. So, yeah. Hope you enjoyed the Moody Blues. I know all the songs I've played or I'm playing or going to play, I've played before. But I'm really enjoying this Children of Pepper CD. There's so much great stuff. We're going to fade that out. I'm going to say my goodbyes here. I don't know if two will follow us or what, but let's get the real bell, the big bell, the big silver baby going as we say our goodbyes. You know, I like the ring of the little babies even more than this one, but this is permanent fixture here on the road trek. It's just good to be sitting back in Sal. So the fact that I forgot to load my batteries up and instead of recording from Thompson Park, where you would have had a different podcast, but maybe there would have been considerable overlap. And instead, here we are in Sal. I still have a couple of beer in the fridge, a cider, and I found my gummy bear supply. That was a treat, too. Holy shit, I got two 50%ers. Now, normally the ones they sell in Ontario, you can only buy up to 10% THC. In Vancouver, I bought two of them with 50 milligrams of THC, called a BC Pineapples. So I'm saving those for a special occasion. And then I got another little bag here of assorted nummies gummies. And these babies have 25 milligrams. So, yeah, maybe I need one of those for Saturday night. All of this is leading up to Saturday night and seeing my new friends and the gathering at that Sonar podcast network is throwing on. So see some of you there, and yeah, have fun with your fellow humans. Come on, that's the name of the game. Scabber Dude signing out. Bye for now.
LSD was central to the whole thing. People try and play that down now, and they get uncomfortable when you start talking about the fact that LSD was one of the main things that turned left-wing, serious political anti-war movement into something religious and visionary after that. It was no longer just political and you know, folk music and help the Negroes and fight the war and all that. It became religious, mystical, you know. Saving the earth and the preciousness of nature and living close to nature, living spontaneously, you know, it became much more radical and extreme in its purest form, you know, because of LSD. LSD was the road to Damascus for the hippies. It just knocked you down and it's like a blinding bright light in your face, you know, showing you something much deeper and vaster than merely rebelling against a political system, you know, rebelling against or deeply questioning the whole validity of industrial civilization, per se.
But Cram also noticed that hippies were quick to claim the spiritual high ground with all the tedious one-upmanship of recent converts.
Since it was mostly children of the middle class, it was immediately something for them to be smug about. Oh, I've seen the light and you haven't, you know, kind of attitude they went around with, which became really insufferable. I'm beautiful, I'm spiritual, I've lost my ego and you haven't. You know, it's like meeting some smug Christian who says, I'm saved and you're going to go to hell unless you too are saved. You know, it's kind of that attitude. And it became like every social gathering became an encounter group where everybody sat around trying to out-cool each other. You know, it's really annoying. I mean, the positive things that came out of that were people really saw through for a while the whole hype of consumer culture, the whole hype of technology and, you know, how technology is going to save us and all that crap and somehow the values of living simply and all that stuff, you know, and the ecology movement, I think, was really sparked by that. Thank you.
and on to the same word. Have you heard? Now you know that you are free. Living all your life at ease. Each day has its own way. Down life's hallway.